listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Outta Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ, live from Las Vegas, live on a Friday, live on 225 FSR stations across this great nation. We're jam-packed today in studio. One of the pros who knows, Steve Fezzik. How you doing, Steve?
I am excellent, RJ, in great spirits with Vegas reopening.
Yes, we'll be getting to that for sure. Is it the Vegas lead? We'll see. Sports bettors listen for the money. Sports fans to know more than their buddies. Now, Fez is a pro. Jonas isn't. He's a Joe. But he's our favorite Joe. He's in L.A., Jonas Knox.
Always good to be here, RJ. And yes, on a day in which the lights have come on for the first weekend in Vegas in at least a couple of months, and we've got good news from one league who has set a start date. What is the Vegas lead here on this Friday?
It's our new setup where I have a full TV of Jonas. So if he's like drifting off when I'm on an 8-minute monologue, I can see it now. I mean, this is perfect. I'm going to make that's not the lead, though. The lead is baseball. I heard before this week started, this could be the week, meaning if they don't get it done this week, we're starting to run into, is it going to get done? Well, as far as I can see, we got some numbers and they are way, way apart.
Yeah, and it was earlier today that Jeff Passan of ESPN was on Get Up, and he said that although he still thinks we're going to have baseball back on the field this season, it could be just a 48-game season per the March agreement that they have with the players, but the players with the ability to still say no to certain things when that season is launched.
First, let's really quantify the stupidity of this, all right? And what do I mean? I mean, in general, in business, the more willing you are to risk it all, the more crazy you are. Joe Pesci in Casino with the bank guy, and he says, I think you're confused. You got me wrong. My business is jail. In a way, risk is the ultimate business of a businessman. A lot of people are willing to work hard for money. Not as many are willing to work hard to lose a lot of money. But as a businessman, you've got to be willing to lose a lot to make a lot. And these baseball owners, we can make them out to be bumbling billionaires. We can make them out to be anything. They're billionaires. Some of it's from, I'm sure, it were certainly instances of inheritance. Others, self-made. Either way, billionaires. And even if they're dumb, they got smart people often around them. Their lawyers are $900 an hour. They're pretty good. Okay. I like when businessmen are willing to play chicken. And that's what this is. You're driving a car one way, your opponent's driving the other. If you both stay driving, it's crash, Malachi Crunch style, baby. Who has the guts to keep driving the furthest? That dictates so much. Now is not the time to be doing that. This is the sports league that one time, baseball, they didn't have a World Series champion in like 100 years. 1919, literally the Black Sox. They still had a world champion, even if it was fixed. Vietnam, WWE, didn't miss one World Series through World War II. Normandy invasion baseball games. But somehow, the fight over the last 10% of these dollars, I get it. They all think baseball is going to happen. But when you play chicken, there's always a risk. Who knows? The steering might go out. You just don't know. This is like playing chicken with your three kids in the back seat. Meaning, you're not going to play chicken if you got precious cargo, right? The fans' faith in baseball is precious cargo, and they're playing chicken. I find it egregious. We'll go through the numbers. I find it egregious. Now, who do we blame? We'll figure that out. Jonas, you agree with me that the import here is as high as I say?
I think it's terrible. I think with every other sport, at least having a plan and coming together and coming to some sort of a common agreement for the future, even in a fall that's got college football, the NFL, and all of that, for all these sports to be able to figure it out, yet Major League Baseball is talking about a 48-game season at best, I think it's a terrible look.
I agree. And you know what else I've noticed? Now that I got a spot on Jonas, he's all nervous, so he's forgetting the press. I've got him right where I want him. That is the same thing. Do you think that this is as egregious? And why, when I say egregious, I mean with the stakes so high, with so much at stake, fighting over the last bit of money is unseemly. It's not smart, in my opinion.
I agree, and let's face it, a little bit of a collision has already occurred, I would argue, because we're breaking down all these numbers for their impact this year. But every day that goes by in July, when we're vacant, we got no sports, team sports going on in America, baseball is losing out on fans, not just this year, but fans that they could have for years afterwards. This could have been a super positive if they could have come back first before anyone else in July.
So you're talking about opportunity cost. It's almost like the profit that they've let go, and now we're potentially entering into massive losses. It's one thing. If they get this thing signed, we might have a little bad taste in our mouth, but we're going to forget about that. But they're coming inching closer and closer to crashing, right? But in a weird way, let's extend the analogy of the chicken. We're saying each mile of gas or each 100 feet of gas is really expensive. It's $100 million. And every time they're moving to each other, every increment, they're increasing the chance of a crash, but they're also losing money along the way.
Yes, exactly. So it's already been a major, major setback for baseball. Even if they signed the agreement today and they started July 15th instead of July 1st.
And it's always been about fighting over this last piece, chunk of money. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Let's get to those numbers. So owners are saying we are losing every game we play. Remember, if they're able to communicate this, message this, the owners will have the high ground. Because by their estimate, and let's agree, their estimate is going to be favored to them, right? Open the books. Yeah, I hear you. In fact, if the owners want their financial situation to be a metric, a consideration, they probably should open the books. All right. That said, here we are. They're saying they're going to lose, even if they play 48 games only, almost $500 million, $460 million. Now, how do they come to that number? They're saying they literally are going to lose $640,000 per game. So Pirates play Kansas City. They should lose in that game, but okay, they're going to lose 604. But Yankees, Red Sox, on average, you know, all right, $640,000. So a little more than $500,000. So it makes sense. Every game they play, it's like going on vacation. Now, you don't pay for your hotel, do you, in Monterey?
No, we get it comped.
And you, Jonas, I got to do a quick aside.
Uh-oh.
You know, Billy Walters is out of jail now, apparently, with the COVID, the yeah. famous batter. And he's got his, like, $100 million house, I think it is. I read. I don't know exactly. In Carlsbad, California, which was near where Fezzik vacations for weeks at a time.
Right.
And I go, what do you think has the bigger cost of living? So we were checking it out on the pod. He goes, I'd be very upset if Carlsbad had a... Like, he was looking his nose down at a place that Billy Walters has a mansion in. True or false?
True.
That's Steve Fezzik. I'm not. I'm RJ Bell. Okay. It makes a ton of sense for the owners to say, if we're losing every game, now why would they be losing every game? Because the revenue stream is going to be different than expected, right? Fans, concessions, whatever, you know, less baseball. I guess on a per game basis, you're going to get paid per game from the contract with the TV network. But who knows? Maybe they've got some escalator that they play a certain number of games. Whatever it is, they're telling us we're losing. The owners are telling everybody we're losing per game. I don't know if you can take that fully seriously without opening the books. But let's say that we accept it, understanding it's probably inflated some. I don't doubt they're losing per game. So even if that number's less, the owners are saying we're willing to lose money to have a season. but we can't be asked to lose too much. So let's play 48 games. We'll accept in that equation a $460 million collective loss, have a championship, and move on. If they're right with the numbers, that's a hell of a thing for the fan. I mean, they're saying for the fans, we'll lose a half a B. Jonas, just in that regard, if the numbers are right, that does seem to be fan-friendly, that they're willing to lose to have a season. Most businesses won't operate at a loss.
Yeah, and they've made that clear from the get-go with these two proposals that have gone public to where they've said, hey, listen, we want to put something together. Here's our offer and here's another offer. They've been trying to win this PR battle. And from a fan standpoint, if I see somebody in both, you know, millionaires versus billionaires and that old adage, if I see one of them openly say, hey, we're okay losing money, we just want to get this product on the field for you, then at least that gives me the impression they're trying.
Now, listen, that is everyone's not going to feel that way, but I think that's the general feeling. That's Jonas Knox in LA. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Fez, you, I think, got to the crux of it in the pre-show meeting. You said, 48, let's not forget the players, based upon the March agreement, are getting paid per game. So every game less they play than what they could play is another 162nd, in theory. Every game is one divided by 162 of the total salary. It's a little bit less, a little bit less every game they don't play. Thus, they should want to play more games, you'd think.
Exactly right. And that's why the players came back to the owners and said, look at 82 games, we'll play 114 games. We'll play till Thanksgiving because they're getting paid the same per game. So the players essentially haven't really given out a proposal where they're making less per game. Every proposal they've made, they said, we want to get paid exactly what we were being paid per game even back in January.
That's Steve Fezzik. Now, I personally believe the owners should take the hit here. And if you're new, you're going to say, another talk show guy. Jonas, you listen to a lot of talk show guys. Where am I at on the spectrum of player love? Whereas, the players are, I'd say I'm in the bottom 20%. Yeah, of talk show guys backing the players.
Yeah, you're not a lot of these fanboys that are on the air that always are sucking up to the players, talking about how great the players are, and they're always in the right. Definitely not.
And I don't think it's even – I think there's some of that where if they get a chance to be on the periphery of these famous people that, you know. But I also think it's they relate the players to the working class, and they want to be like the – they want to be the proletariat. They want to be part of the people. Listen, dude, you're getting paid to talk about sports. You're not part of the people. Let's start that part. So, I mean, you can be part of the people in your upbringing. I mean, I can say my dad's a coal miner. He is. My mom's a school teacher. That's the people. In Ohio, in a town of 4,000 – and I said, I got to get away from these people. I got to come to Vegas. So I love the salt of the earth. But the big city's got good things, too. You know, there's all this stuff. Be who you are and who I am. Is I try to just look at it and say, who's right and who's wrong? Usually, I'm going to go with I'll go with whoever. But usually, I don't love all the over-the-top player stuff. This is wrong, though. If somehow, some way, Amazon came in or someone and said, we're going to give you X, Y, and Z, like a bunch of money for whatever. Unless it's contemplated in the contract that that'd be a split, that's the owner's money. When you have the upside, you got to take the downside. And to me, what I hate most about these bailouts, they call it, you know, corporate welfare. I get it. The case can be made that you got to bail out the banks in 2008 because it would have crushed the whole economy. Okay. But make sure those banks feel the same pain the people do. Diminish the overall pain, but make sure it's spread around fairly.
I think that's really well said.
And it wasn't. And it's caused a lot of problems. I mean, like the foundationally, that bailout has caused a lot of problems. Here we go. Owners, they didn't contemplate this. Who could? But you're the owner. You get the upside, you deal with the downside. I don't know if the players are going to be able to stick it out and play that game of chicken. I wish they met in the middle and played, but financially, as a finance guy, I think it's the owner's responsibility. And that's a rare thing for me to say, as opposed to, in general, as an owner myself at pregame.com, I try to think like an owner. And you know something? Fez, did I ask you to, well, you're, you know, Fez, you got your guarantees, but you also are paid on performance. You know, Matt, the producer, McKenzie Research, et cetera. We didn't do one pay cut. Now, I'll tell you this, if we had to, I would have went and said, hey, we got a choice. but we didn't have to, and I didn't. I'm not going to make that, oh, RJ, that's awesome. It's what I thought was right, because I promise if we have a great year and I make an extra stick, yeah, I'm going to break them off a little bark. They're not getting it. They're not getting it all, I tell you that much. So I got to take the heat, too. Closing thoughts, Jonas.
Yeah, I think that this is really, they keep talking about this week's the most important week, this week's the most important week, this is going to tell us a lot. Well, the weeks keep going by, and pretty soon we're going to be at July, and people are going to have a bunch of different options to look forward to, and baseball's not going to be one of them.
Fez, is, you're right, is they could have had a month of just complete clear skies, man. Yep. And they don't care. I mean, listen, you get to be a billionaire like that. You're sitting there. I guess that's why I like a Mark Cuban. As much as I disagree with a lot that he says and believes, I love that he has a passion for it. A lot of these old-time owners, it's generational. They don't. All right, when we come back, Vegas is back. We've got the on-the-ground reporting about the openings, many, many of them yesterday.
That's coming up next. But first, Straight Outta Vegas is brought to you by AutoZone. AutoZone has more ways for you to get what you need when you need it with their free same-day pickup. You can place your order online and grab what you need today at more than 5,700 AutoZone locations, in-store or curbside. Visit AutoZone.com today to start your job fast. Get in the zone. AutoZone. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox. This is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight Outta Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we will have inside details on the grand reopening of Las Vegas.
Yeah, good feedback on that first segment. At RJ in Vegas on Twitter, if you want to comment. One thing I want to get to quickly on that we didn't, because it's fascinating. So the theory is the owners are losing per game because they don't have as much revenue as they would have typically, right? The concessions, the stands for fans, etc. Okay. So they're playing play less games. Players say, hey, we were getting paid per game. We're going to play more games. We don't care if you lose or not. Where is the equilibrium point where it's exactly the same amount of money for the players because they're playing more games? That is 17%, 17.2% decrease. So if the players say, we'll take 83 cents on the dollar, then they can play, no matter how many games they play, it will be the same loss for the owners. Is that how you understand that, Fed?
That's if it's an 82-game season.
Oh, to get to 82?
Yes.
And to get more? Okay, that's interesting. So it would be, okay. So 82, I think, was the original offer. It sounds right. It feels it's about in the middle.
3 months of baseball before it gets cold at the end of September. It's
I don't think anyone would be upset at 82.
Right.
So for them to get to 82 from 48, the players would have to say, we'll take 83 cents on the dollar. Boy, if they don't do that, I think they get the heat. Great day to join us. We're going to be talking about the Vegas reopening. We're very, very excited about it. We are the fastest growing show on Fox Sports Radio. You can listen by podcast anytime. Just search for RJ Bell or Straight Outta Vegas on your favorite player. Right now in Vegas, 101 degrees. The neon, I could get cutesy. It's just on. It's going to be on.
Yeah, RJ, speaking of that neon, it is. We are coming up on the first weekend that Vegas has been open since March. And so here we go. You guys are the center of the gaming universe once again as Las Vegas embarks on a brand new Vegas.
Wow, I didn't think of that. We weren't for a while. Thanks for not saying that, because that would have upset me all this time. Back. All right, Fez, returns are good. You were on the ground. We'll talk about that experience. But just from the reporting, exceeded expectations.
Yeah, Wednesday night at midnight, the D opens up, and there's...
So in downtown, the D, go ahead.
Yeah, so just like a nightclub type of environment, lots of pictures taken, very few patrons wearing masks. Looks like a tremendous party, pent-up demand. Everyone basically filled up the D Wednesday night after midnight.
Were you there?
I was not.
Because I was thinking, when I heard nightclub environment, I'm thinking, I think of nothing... But a 55-year-old guy with a big pompadour, with the shoe polished black hair, like walking through in that at the nightclub, right?
Yeah, just head out of our podcast. He'll go right on down, get bottle service.
No,
right?
But didn't. No. Okay. But yeah, it did look good, and we talked about that yesterday, but you know, because it was Wednesday night. Now, how many places opened up across the city or the stadium?
A little over 50.
50. And how many are not open right now?
It's about 50% are open right now.
Really? I heard there was only going to be about 25. Mackenzie, you want to check on that? You got that? All right.
Yeah, I heard 24 are not open as of right now, including the Palms.
And there is distinction, because you'll hear counts and they talk about the Signature, right? Which is really just a hotel that's an extension of the MGM. But it doesn't have gaming, or at least I don't think they have any real, you know, they might have a table or two. But in general, it feels like about 2/3 of the places have opened of the actual gambling operation type. And the numbers look good. We talked about yesterday, North Dakota opened, Arizona opened, and they were up year over year. So the pent up demand, which we call dice in this case, was bigger than death, which is going out. Dice versus death. Trademark. You thought, though, you did go yesterday, Thursday, to the Wynn, which is a very swanky place. What did you think there?
Yeah, not that many people there. I was a little disappointed. I thought there'd be more folks there. Maybe it was about 25% capacity, but I got to be fair.
So hold on a second. Let's not talk about your guess of what was going to be there, because that's fine. But how about if it was a normal Thursday in June? How'd the crowd compare to that?
It seemed like it was comparable, if not just slightly less than a normal June Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. But remember, the sportsbook's empty, RJ, and normally people, there are some games, something going on, and so there'd be a lot more people in the sportsbook.
So are you talking about just the sportsbook?
I'm talking about the entire casino.
Yeah. But overall, the number of people that would be drawn by the sportsbook wouldn't overly affect the entire casino's business or crowdedness. So I get if you're sitting in the sportsbook, it's not going to be as busy. But if you walk out to the blackjack tables, it was less busy than you would have thought.
Slightly less busy.
Jonas, let's see if you understand Fez yet. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, talking with Jonas Knox in L.A. I know why the Wynn isn't as busy. I have a theory. Do you have any sense of why the Wynn wouldn't be busy? This is fun, but I'd like to see. What do you think?
Why it wasn't as busy to Fez, or just
as relative to, let's say, the other places which reported, boy, it's busier than we thought.
Maybe because they think it's a little too upscale and people financially don't want to be gambling at tables that have a bunch of big limits when they're not really sure what
that's
the economy's
going
to look like.
There might be part of that. I didn't think of that. It's just generally people aren't at that win level. Festo is, but normal people aren't. I think it's even more that this is dice versus death to some degree. And you might say, oh, you're having fun. Yeah, we are having fun with it, but your risk of getting coronavirus goes up if you go to a casino. Who are we kidding? They can take every precaution. It's going to go up. Because there's still a risk, I guess, in theory, if it's on food that gets delivered, you know, whatever, but it just goes up. The love of gambling, rich people have it too, but they're usually more judicious. Like, their whole lives are spent measuring risk. Should our son go to this private school or that private school? And hey, you better donate $50,000 to that thing, because he's not getting in preschool that we want him to. I mean, we've seen that depicted, and obviously we had the scandal with the colleges. This is what they do. And normal people, salt of the earth, they're drinking beer, they're drinking, you know, tap water. I think in general, the media elite and the true rich, which are different, and the media elite usually want to be rich, but they're not that rich, they're all very deliberate, very calculating. And the average person isn't. And I think in general, the average person, that, you know, the masses, their disinterest in this COVID fear, it speaks to that they think differently. Fez, you're, though, with the very rich people, just calculating everything.
Yes, exactly. So you're more likely to see me on a beach in Carmel than in, say, the panhandle of Florida close to Alabama. Yes.
Quick question. Do you worry that if there is, like, ultimately, like, an uprising, like a revolution, almost like the French Revolution, and where the guillotines come out, at that point, are you worried?
I never thought about it. I don't know
but
the
you
answer.
You need to understand it is not a gamble. It is a calculated risk.
Well, I think he's taking an extra calculated risk here with all this talk. Let them eat cake.
Oh, yeah, Marie Antoinette. Let them eat cake.
Oh, he said it with no apprehension. Let's take a quick. You got any thoughts on that, Jones?
I've wondered. This is a little inside Vegas, but I've been wanting to ask you guys this because I thought about it. Do you think that it's more likely that people gambling this weekend in Vegas are going to win money or more likely that they lose money? Meaning, maybe Vegas wanting to be as warm and welcoming as possible, maybe it's a little bit easier to win on a slot machine or at a card game than it normally would be so that people get excited about being back. Or are casinos needing that money that they've lost all this time, and maybe they're going to tighten up the slot machines a little more? Maybe the card games are going to be a little bit more difficult to win. How do you guys see that playing out this weekend?
It's a fascinating question because I would have never thought to ask it, because to me, and let me ask you Fez, because you have a deeper understanding of the casino play, because most casino games are net. In fact, all casino games on the surface are net negative, meaning you can play perfect blackjack if you're not counting and still lose. So the whole percentage error, if you play optimal with no counting, is what?
Half percentage for the
half percent. So every $100 you bet, you lose 50 cents in the long run.
A great way to look at it, yeah.
Okay. Roulette, much higher, right?
5.26%.
Craps, now here's the irony. Craps is a game you can't actually beat no matter what you do, but it's the simplest game to lose the least. Don't pass, free odds, 10X, let's say. If you don't know what we're talking about, it doesn't really matter. It's just a way to bet craps. That's the lowest, right?
Yeah, it starts at 1.2% and goes down as you take your odds.
And you can get below 0.5% at
yes.
that point. So you could say I'm only losing 30 cents per 100. So you can have a lot of fun and have almost a flat expectation. But craps you can't beat no matter what, unless you're, I guess, cheating with the dice. But, you know, come on. Do you want the hammer? Left hand or right hand? So now you can beat blackjack by counting cards. What percentage of the card counters do you think actually are positive EV, are profitable? Because I've heard, and I believe, card counting has made money for the casino. Because there's so many people that think they can count. Yeah, they might lower their negative a little, but they're still losing. And if you really win, they get you out of there pretty quick.
Yeah, I think it's less than half. And frankly, you see some guys that say they're card counters and then they do such goofy things like double down on ace nine, for instance. Oh, the count's positive, and they make huge mistakes.
That's Steve Fezzik. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. How many hours do you think, wild guess, that you've spent playing blackjack?
Mm-hmm. Thousands.
Thousands of hours.
Yeah.
It's funny. It shows you the sick, not even the sickness, it's the mentality of the Vegas guys. Fez, how many, what's he talked about blackjack? 3 times in a year and a half, Jonas, maybe? Hardly at all.
If that, yeah, if that.
And it's thousands of hours of just grinding, trying to have a, he, listen, baptized in blood.
You don't know this, but before I
don't know it after almost 10 years.
Before
go ahead.
I bet sports for a living in the late 80s, I started out playing blackjack.
In the late 80s.
Yeah.
And you encountered Vegas when you were traveling from, you were at Northwestern at the time?
Yes.
That's funny. There's so many stories about that, Jonas, where these academic types come through Nevada. Oh, look. And then they get the bug. Right? Ed Thorpe, who wrote the book Beat the Dealer, was the first book on card counting, ended up being a hedge fund guy, made billions. But, you know, blackjack was his first love. So bringing it back around to Jonas's question, there's always this sense that Vegas gets to decide how much you're going to let you win or how much they're going to win themselves, how much you're going to lose. Slot machines, that's true, meaning you can be tight or loose. Do you know if they change them, like, for the weekend? Hey, it's a Memorial Day weekend. We're going to make them tougher or not?
I do not know for certain, but my understanding, I believe, is on a weekly basis, they look at all the pay schedules, what percentage are they given back, and they adjust them weekly.
So in theory, if you think you got more squares coming, they're drunk for Memorial Day, it's tougher.
Usually, yes.
But with things like blackjack, craps, whatever, that's going to stay the same.
Yes.
This is my answer, though. His question was, are the bettors going to win more or less because its first week is so unique? I think they lose more, and here's why. I think they're risking their lives in a way to play. You think they're going to say, you know, I'm down 100.5. I'm going to go take a nap. No, give me a Red Bull. You know, I got a friend of mine, Tom's his name. He works with us, and I've known him for years. He was in my wedding. We call him, when he comes to Vegas, Death Row Tom. Because he acts like he's a man on death row. I mean, he's up all night. He's eating dinner at 2 a.m. It's just like, if you were on death row, you'd act like Death Row Tom.
I think you're spot on with this. I could see a lot of guys starting with 1,000, right? And it's like 3 a.m. They're down to 550. And they're like, well, in the next 10 minutes, I'm either going to win or I'm going to walk out with nothing, right?
I think discipline, Jonas, my gut feeling is discipline goes down. What do you think?
No, that's what I think as well, too. I think people have been cooped up for so long that they're thinking to themselves, you know what? Screw it. If all the threats are real, I'm gonna go out in a blaze of glory. If I'm gonna get COVID, I'm gonna go out spending money and eating fat burger at 4 a.m.
So in a way, this feeds right into Vegas' hands.
Yes,
it does.
It reminds me of Mad Men. It was the night of the Cuban Missile, or one of the nights of the Cuban Missile Crisis. They had a party, and the guy hits on the girl. He goes, "It's the end of the world anyway, baby." So I think there is an element to that. It's going to be Fez's choice. What does he want to talk about?
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Straight Outta Vegas is brought to you by AutoZone. AutoZone has more ways for you to get what you need when you need it with their free same-day pickup. You can place your order online and grab what you need today at more than 5,700 AutoZone locations in-store, curbside. Visit AutoZone.com today to start your job fast. Get in the zone. AutoZone. I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. He is the voice of Vegas, RJ Bell.
Boy, that Jordan news really gets to the heart of the debate, because the theory is, hey, if you're a black person, you make it, you have such a position to help the conversation, help it. Jordan, by many accounts, didn't do enough of that. The other side of the argument would be, hey, make all the money you can, then take that money and do something with it. And now the 100 mil, it's a lot of money. Kudos to Jordan, but you got to wonder, if he would have spoken out more and made less money, in the end, what's going to be better? It's a fascinating conversation. Speaking out or speaking wrongly, Drew Brees. We're going to get to, I think, some takeaways from the political side of that next. But first, Fez, quickly, what's the Vegas reaction? On one hand, you could say, looks like there might be turmoil in New Orleans. On the other hand, it's like, these are pros, it's nothing. What does the market say?
The market has soured a little bit on New Orleans, and here's why, RJ. Back on Monday, before Brees had said anything, season win number, New Orleans, 10.5 games.
All right, so 16 games, we're supposed to win 10.5, so 11 exceeded expectation, 10 or less fell short.
Now, I took a look at about 8 or 9 books this morning. Half of them are at 10.5, half of them are at 10. A little bit of adjustment of vig, but definitely New Orleans.
So about a quarter game down.
Exactly.
And that's like a team that moves pretty much significantly throughout the whole offseason might only go up 3/4 of a game, right?
Yeah, and that would be like the biggest or second biggest mover, right?
Yeah, so we're saying like about a third of the biggest move you're ever going to see in the offseason happened downward off of this political news.
Exactly right.
Well, now we've quantified what it means, at least what it's expected to mean for the team. What does Drew Brees in the aftermath mean for the cause of social justice? I have a strong opinion.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox. This is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm RJ Bell. We are straight out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. So, RJ, there is still a lot of feedback, a lot of commentary on the controversial remarks of one Drew Brees, Saints quarterback, earlier this week.
Here's a theory for you to disregard completely.
Or not. I think this is very, very interesting and noteworthy and important, to be honest. And let's talk about it. One is, let's assume Drew Brees is not a stone-cold racist. I don't know for sure. I don't. What I know is, if you're around professional athletes that are majority minority, and, you know, the old joke is, oh, I got a black friend. You know, no, that's not what this is about. This is about day-to-day, he's around a lot of people that probably can sniff out pretty well if someone's one of those closet racists. We don't know for sure. He could hide it. But it seems to me the players themselves, though they were very disappointed from their perspective in what he said, there wasn't a sense of, hey, here's the truth coming out.
Yeah, and backing up that assumption, former teammate Joe Horn came out, said very positive things about Drew Brees as a teammate and how involved Drew Brees has been in the community helping the city.
Now, I think that speaks to his heart, doesn't speak to the egregiousness or lack thereof, and that's a decision for everyone to make about what he said. But let's assume he doesn't have hate in his heart. So now the worst thing he did, assuming that you're of the position that what he said was really bad, was he glossed over the complexity of the situation, that he made it simple, he made it about the flag, but it isn't. That's the complaint. I listened closely because I was like, you know, Clay Travis was on the yesterday just saying that is the perfect statement. Like, not the apology, the initial statement. Now, a lot of people might say, well, Clay's this. Okay. But in general, let's accept there's a big chunk of the country that's going to agree with Clay, that's going to agree with Drew's original statement. I'm not even debating who's right and wrong. I'm saying that the complexity that the other side, the progressives, say that was missed by Brees is probably the worst thing Brees did. Now, how bad was it? That's the question. Okay. I can't judge that because I'm not the one. You know, that's the thing we got to understand is if you're not black, you can have opinions. You got to have opinions about politics if you're going to vote or whatever. But you can't, I think, in my opinion, you can't act like you know what they feel, what the other feels. Whoever that other is, I don't know what a woman feels in some ways. I don't know what someone who lives in California feels. It's about walk a mile in my shoes. Well, in a way, you can't. There's some shoes you can't. You can try, but you can't. So I'm not saying there was an overreaction. I'm saying I don't fully understand the depth of the reaction because I can't. But I respect the reaction. All right. So Brees comes out with his apology number one. I believe it was as unequivocal of an apology as I could. If I wrote it, I have some pretty good communication skills. If I could have written that, I would have said, I just wrote an apology. There was no equivocation. You know, it felt like to me there was. I said, wow, he apologized. The reaction was pretty mixed. It's like, well, you know, okay. A lot of people acknowledge, hey, it was great he apologized, and there was a lot of buts.
Yes.
And then it forced him, or his reaction was, to say, I'm going to give a second apology. Here's my point. It's all leading up to one thing. How many people do you think would have no hate in their heart, no racism in their heart, who would do the first apology even because he saying, hey, I don't want to offend anyone. But after the first would have said, enough, you've lost me. He wouldn't have said that. That person would have not followed up with a second apology. And in his heart, whatever his interest was to fight and help would have been dampened, maybe not completely, maybe not go over to the other side and start hating people, but it would have, whatever the working together part of it that there could have been, would have decreased. And if the progressive side believes that only people who would not only have done the first apology, but the second two are the types they need on their side to win. And what is it? This is about votes. Ultimately, the change is going to come politically. Well, hearts and minds start first, no doubt. The change is going to come political, or at least a big chunk of it will be political. And to me, the people who would have made the first apology but wouldn't make the second, I don't know what's being gained or if enough is being gained to lose that group. Because to some degree, with demands like that, there's going to be people with no hate in their heart that will say misstatements. Some of them won't apologize even the first time. All right, okay. Some will apologize the first, but not the second. At each increment, you're saying, we don't want you unless you're going to do this and this and this. And each thing you ask for means less and less people will be on your side. Now, they might say, Yeah, but we want people that are really on our side, or it's life and death and we can't take anything less. And that's a debate. You can debate the best way to affect change. But I feel strongly there's a heck of a chance you're losing people between the first and second apology that has good feelings, but they only want to be challenged so far.
If you missed any of today's show, you can check out the podcast at foxsportsradio.com. The Odd Couple is next on many of these Fox Sports Radio affiliates. We are straight out of Vegas, back on Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!